Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays. You're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like? Because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora. He's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/Count the Dings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
So what do you think?
It's showtime.
All the times we had together. Yep.
That's the intro to the show, by the way.
Yep. That's us.
Let's get it cracking. Birdman hand rub. Everybody, let's go.
All right.
Welcome back to another episode of Showtime. I'm your host, Jason Madison, as always, joined by my co-hosts, Bethany Anderson and Anthony Mays. How y'all feeling today?
Feeling great, feeling good. How about you?
Oh, we did it, folks. We did it.
The hit is on.
It's the off season.
The hit is on pause. No, yeah. No, I'm good. You know, it's We came to the end of winning time. I found out, so I was hanging out with my family's, my cousin Chavis's birthday over the weekend, and we were all hanging out. So we started talking about the show, and found out that my cousin Dom Kennedy, he really loves the show, and so we started chopping it about it. His mom and my mom are, you know, both from that era, and his mom was really into the Magic documentary. And so I realized, like, even with my dad, like, my dad got, like, mad at me when I was asking him about the show. He's like, nah, I'm not watching that. I lived it. And so, like, all these.
Oh, my God. Is yeah. that the same thing that Kareem said that kept him from wanting to watch it? It was like, oh, yeah. I lived it, so I'm not watching it.
Yeah. And so, like, wow. Yeah, my aunt, my dad, they both had the same exact reaction to Winning Time. Like, as people who were hanging out in the Forum Club and going and doing all this stuff, they really do not want to watch the show for whatever reason, which is really interesting wow. to me. So I thought I'd start the pod off by sharing that little nugget.
Very protective of their culture, their moment.
Yeah, I mean, that was their moment in history.
More of a generation gap, because even if there was something about my lifetime, I'd still be curious about it, I think.
Right, yeah. I used to love watching those shows like All About the 90s and shit like that. What? Let's right. relive it. I can't wait. Yes, I was there, but I want to see it again.
Right. I think maybe if we...
Maybe it was just so lit at yeah. that time. That and, you know, taint the memory?
And I think part of it is that their generation was pre-internet, pre-cell phone, pre-taking pictures of every event. So they have these very specific recollections of these times where nobody got to see it, and it was... Part of the glory of it was that it was so private, you know, and that nobody, if you weren't there, you really weren't there, you know, type of thing. And I think they held on to that feeling and that, you know, just being like, yeah, we was really living it, and nobody being able to be like, okay, what was it really like? I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Or I feel like a lot of, just kind of tie this in with Atlanta. Mm-hmm. You think, can they remember it? Were they under any influences that maybe they don't want to, like, relive? Or
yeah, I think
they don't remember.
I think it's a significant amount of that. I mean, with my dad is very, like, sober. He never drank, like, he didn't do drugs or anything like that. So, you know, I think it's probably, like, very much in his memory. But he might also be somebody who, like, to embellish things a little bit, and so you know, it takes a little bit of the sting off the, your embellishment once it's shown in this way. Because, you know, he was like, one of the things that Dom was saying, because, you know, my dad always would tell this story, like, oh, I was in the locker room, I was there, I was with Kareem and Magic and Byron and all that, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, you see the show, it's like, wasn't nobody in that locker room but them. You know what I'm saying? Like, we was talking about that. That was, so, you know, so, certain things like that, I think they were probably, like, getting off on us being younger and not being there. And now it's kind of like, it can't really.
Yeah, you had to be there.
Yeah.
You just had to be there.
Yeah.
It's like inside jokes. It's like, sorry, can't fill you in on what's going on here.
Right. And it don't even be that funny. It's just like, yeah.
It's like, I want to laugh too, guys. No.
Right. I did like this episode of Atlanta.
Your dad was not eating Nepalese space cakes is what you're telling me, Jason. Wasn't on the Nepalese hallucinogenic honey.
No, he's never been to Europe, so
can I get some of that?
Yeah.
Nepalese space cakes. I need some of these. Once again, we were deprived of a Darius adventure here to concentrate on the real star of the show, Alfred. And I read an interesting article on The Ringer. Shout out to Allison Herman. And it pointed out the connection between some of the episodes we've seen this year and episodes we've seen in the past.
Okay.
And this one really is a lot like Woods, where Alfred goes on his walkabout and he's haunted by the old man in the woods who is probably his dad.
Right.
And so now, and then it's, that episode was happened on the day that his mom passed away, or the anniversary of his mom passing away. So that was the theme of that episode. And his mom is named Lorraine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like Marty McFly.
Oh, yeah. Great point.
Back to the Future. Yeah, I enjoyed a lot about this episode. I think we should get an episode that's just full of all the lost Darius moments.
Darius and Van. Just a Darius and Van episode. I'm here for it. Make it. Yeah. You don't even have to put it in the 10, you know? Make it a bonus one. Web series, exactly. Whatever.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I don't want to get too wrapped up into this little moment, but when the boys are chasing him, what kind of rapper is he? What is his perception? You know?
Because now?
in the public eye, like what are they trying to get us to think that is he kind of like a joke? Because the way that they were like antagonizing him, it was like,
yeah, they didn't take him seriously. They don't really care about. Yeah, it's like seeing a person that's like a meme on the internet.
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
Actually seeing them in person, like, oh, you're the person that it's like.
Yeah, like he was a joke.
Is he?
He was a bit of a joke, and that was kind of like, I didn't want to focus too much on that, but it did kind of make me think, like, huh, what is his perception supposed to be in the world? And then
that's
like, you know,
I didn't even dwell on that at all. That's so, I love that you guys are bringing that up. That's such a great little vignette right there. But I mean, once again, it is a callback because he does get beat up by some fans in the
right
Woods episode.
Yeah, he does.
But I think with the white fashion episode, and now with that thing that you're pointing out, it's clear that he's sold out. And
yeah,
and mainstream white people are his fans now.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
Which I think fits into the whole arc of this season that we've been talking about. So, yeah, but there's been such a gap between season 2 and season 3. Like, I think he used to be underground and like on the come up, and I think now he's already sold out.
Like, I wonder if you got. I mean, this might take too long to answer on the pod, but if there was a rapper for him to be compared to, like, who would you guys think that he would be closest? And, you know, anybody.
I mean, my first instinct was 2 Chainz, but I still
me too.
Think 2 Chainz
me too.
Cooler, right?
Way
now.
Cooler. And that's the thing. He does not have the cool, any of the cool factor of 2 Chainz, but I was getting a lot of 2 Chainz vibe. I felt like that's what they were
B's
trying
not
to.
Feeling it. He's not
no,
feeling it.
No. I was thinking more of a J. Cole.
What? Really?
Okay.
Like, without Scandal. You know what I mean?
Until Amin shows up in episode. In the next episode. If that
but
happens,
he
we'll know for sure.
But he doesn't seem to have, like, a conscious bone in his body. Like, he seems very aloof to the black plight, and you know, anything that like J. Cole is kind of rooted in, like, you know, look at his Chainz, and I mean the hat, the whole thing with the hat, it was just like J. Cole would never wear that hat. Like, what art, like the only artists that would wear that hat are like 2 Chainz, DaBaby, Future. Like, it's a very like
Cam Newton,
right?
Atlanta thing. It's like an Atlanta thing.
Yeah, like, or like a niggas from the South, but like a like kind of midway flashy, not like, you know. Yeah, that Darkwing Duck hat that Lorraine told him was some clown shit. So I had a question for you guys, and I don't want it to sound like too ignorant or crazy, but was Lorraine a woman, like, all the way?
It's a trans woman.
Okay, it was trans. It was a trans woman. Yeah,
actress.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I thought. I was like, this seems like a trans woman. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, she was great. I really like it. Was Ava Gray. She's been in Pose before. I thought it was perfect. I thought it was really well cast. And
yeah, no, she was the best.
Terrifying.
Yeah, she was like one of the best parts of the episode. Like her line delivery, her whole interaction with him in the museum, everything that she was like giving him was perfect, kind of like seeds of mystery for the episode.
Yeah. It was like pestering Paperboy wouldn't go away, but at the same time, he really didn't want her to go away.
Right.
So I feel like Lorraine represented like his subconscious, a subconsciousness. Mm-hmm. Like he has certain thoughts and feelings that he really hasn't said aloud. He's thinking about, you know, certain things are starting to come to him. And this kind of like confirms his feelings, like it's some sort of out of body experience that he's having and kind of validating him at the same time. It was so weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My biggest question is real, semi-real, or completely imagined?
Well, I think they're doing this thing, this narrative thing that I guess I can call it interesting, for lack of a better term, where they're basically lying to the viewer in every episode in the storytelling in order to create a certain effect. So, you know, in this episode, he walks by himself, like, mm-hmm. twice, you know, at the beginning and at the end.
Base cakes, man. I'm telling you, I need one of these.
And so he's basically, like, cracked out, and, you know, and Darius tells him, like, oh, don't be like that guy. And, you know, we can't really see his face, but there's, you know, the sneaking suspicion that it's going to be him or somebody that's connected to them. But they've done this in multiple episodes with the storyteller now. So I'm curious to know why they keep using this as a device. But to answer your question, Maze, I think that it's semi-real, because I think everything on the show is kind of semi-real.
Mm, deep. B, how are you going to follow that up?
Well, one, I agree. I feel like our subconscious is pretty real. It's our feelings, it's, you know, our deep thoughts and desires that sometimes we're afraid to say out loud. Sometimes people do hallucinogens to tap into that. So I feel like it's semi-real. Sometimes you just have to find a way to access it. And this way is through space cakes.
Yeah. I mean, going back to the woods episode, the old man in the woods, I thought there really was an old man in the woods, but I think what he was saying was made up by Alfred. So I kind of think that's what happened here as well. I think he met Lorraine. I don't know if her name was Lorraine.
Right. Probably that's not. What I was going to ask. Do you think her name was Lorraine?
Probably not. And yeah. I think he really went to the Cancel Club. Was mm-hmm. it called the Cancel Club? Was Liam Neeson really there? That's a whole nother question that we'll have to get to. Yeah. But when they come out and they do, you know, like you said, he sees himself. So there's that fun time loop. Also, there's some fun time loops where it's daytime and then it's nighttime and then it's daytime right. again all of a sudden.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when they come out and it's daytime again, the tone shifts and she starts saying things that she couldn't possibly know. And then now we're back to our man in the cancer attack episode backstage saying all this shit that you could only know if you had Paperboy's phone or whatever. And yes, I think you're exactly mm-hmm. right, Jason. This whole show is semi-real. It's all, the whole show's been on space cakes the entire time.
Yeah, the whole time. The whole time.
To kind of piggyback off of that, I feel like Paperboy is a bit lost. And in every episode, he seems to be trying to connect with people. And it kind of backfires in a weird way. So it just makes the loneliness even more prevalent. We're learning a lot about him right now through his subconscious and through him trying to connect with people. It's like every episode he's had, like that poker game that they had was probably the wildest experience for me, because he's like thinking that he's having a moment with these people and then everyone just picks up and leaves.
Yeah.
So this was like another situation where he is connecting with someone and then he gets told about himself. He gets read real quick and then he wakes up kind of confused about what happened.
Yeah. I want to speak to the unsettled feeling that I felt while watching this episode, mm-hmm. which is kind of the feeling that you get sometimes when you do drugs, or if you do like a drug for the first time and you don't know how it's gonna affect your body. And I love that I still have the ability to immerse myself in like media and be able to just like really go for it, because when he's walking around with that goofy hat on, I felt his character's just like alienation in the space and just like not knowing what was going on and what was coming next. Like I really felt that, like, you know, and the lighting and all that stuff was done really well. When the lady in the red light district is even like taking the picture of him, like all that stuff was really good to kind of set up how disoriented he was as new Jazz. And then and then you know, as majorly disoriented as I felt, they brought me right back when Liam Neeson pops up on the screen. And then I immediately felt a sense of like comfort and just like I knew it was gonna get silly. I knew it was gonna get real silly. And so I was like, all right, this is cool. You know, it's like now you're on a good drug trip because you know something funny or something ridiculous is about to happen.
This was another instance of them suffering from their hiatus, man. Like Chet Hanks last episode.
Yeah, yeah.
This episode, Donald Glover just had these written down.
Yeah.
He doesn't care if it's topical or relevant in the moment. He's like, this happened. I'm going to remind you. In the last like 4 years, this went down. But yes, that was, I mean, it was a hell of a moment.
Yeah. What did you guys think of that?
Well, first, before he got to Liam, I liked the line where they were like, you know what we call Lorraine's apartment, right?
106 like, in Park.
106 in Park.
Yeah. That's Shanil Kular. He's in Sex Education as the dude there. And then Aude de Palliere. I've never really heard of her, but. Yes, I liked them as like the kind of like the Greek chorus of the episode, you know, chiming in there.
Yeah, but I mean, Liam came in, he spit a few bars, but I'm not gonna lie. Once he said what he said, which was the best and worst part about being white is we don't have to learn anything if we don't want to, and this continues on this whole white allyship theme that we have in all of the episodes. So it's like, I mean, I can be for you, but at the same time, I face no consequences, really.
But he wasn't even trying to be a white ally. He was saying, I don't fuck with y'all niggas. Like,
but no, he said at first, you know, he wanted people to see how far he's come and that he's not that person anymore. And it backfired. And so I was like, well, shit, fuck y'all too. I was trying to be, you know, I was trying to be a good person and be honest about who I was and where I was in the dark time.
But at the same time, if you have the capability to not fuck with a race of people based off of an incident that you brought upon yourself, then that's basically showing, you know, what they're trying to show. Like y'all just don't get it.
But I think also it's like, well, what's the reward in me being woke and being who you guys want me to be? Because you guys can try to cancel me, but that's not going to make me feel bad, really bad for what I said.
Right. Well, I guess.
Like, you guys tried to cancel me, but it didn't work.
Yeah, I guess the answer to that is that the whole idea of black people as a monolith and being woke as a response to your anti-blackness is not like, it's just scratching the surface of how terrible that is as an ideology in terms of humanity. Like, you shouldn't treat a group of people as, you know, something for you to hate or, you know, like direct your anger towards or your outrage towards. And the fact that everything in America and, you know, in large parts of the world is like built as a construct of whiteness against or opposed to blackness is the problem within itself. So like everything he's doing is feeding into the problem, and he doesn't understand where the solution even begins. And so that's kind of all wrapped up in the last line that he says, right? And I guess that's where Donald Glover's way of kind of simplifying of what I'm trying to overexplain right now is that, like, white people don't have to learn about being a human or how to deal with other people. They can just walk around being white and being catered to by the rest of the world until they die. And it's up to them if they want to learn or not learn. And so be it if they don't, basically.
Yeah.
Right, Mace?
Yep. Yep. I mean, it's your response to it is interesting. And I wonder this as well, is how much satire is layered into that dialogue from Liam Neeson and his endorsement of it is interesting, right? Like,
yeah.
I looked into the comments that he made at the time that sparked the whole thing, and it definitely sounds like a guy with a lot of hindsight looking back at a young period in his life when he was less thoughtful and rational and just being honest about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which you can't do anymore. Like, that's
it sucks.
Not acceptable, but he was just being reflective, and like,
that's what I thought.
Liam Neeson, you know, grew up in Ireland. Like, it was not exactly a culture of equality
right
at that time. So I thought it was a real interesting use of him here as the emblem of this. It was a little surprising to me. I understand why they didn't, but it was a little surprising that it was the cancel club and that he was the one that we see and not one of the 8 billion people that have been canceled since Liam Neeson.
Right.
Or even if it's not really that person, maybe it's like a Justin Bieber, Tupac situation in this universe, you know, like, is that right. This person? So there wasn't any of that.
But he was never canceled.
That's what you said. They tried to. So in a way, it's like he can kind of come in and out of this club as he pleases.
But that's the thing.
I'm trying to figure out the patrons of this club. Are they fans of the people who are so-called canceled? Because, you know, we got that guy saying like, oh, what is DaBaby like? You know,
right.
Not knowing when this was written and if he was canceled or not at that time. But it's like, who are these people here?
But that's the thing that kind of pissed me off about all of that, like that whole exchange, is that black people don't cancel anybody. Like, name me somebody that black people have actually canceled. We don't even cancel the people we supposed to cancel. Like, we didn't even cancel R. Kelly. Everybody got a homie that still listen to R. Kelly or still fuck with R. Kelly or niggas who ride for Bill Cosby. We don't cancel nobody. Like, name me somebody that black people have actually canceled. I'll wait.
Yeah. Nice long silence for you there. I mean, but then Paperboy is about to perform as New Jazz, right? They try to bring New Jazz up
jazz,
to the stage.
Yeah.
So why would he be canceled? Or what does New Jazz even mean? Or like, it was just very, you know, it's a drug trip episode, right?
Right.
So they can have a little more latitude with not even bothering to try to explain shit.
Well, I was thinking that maybe he felt some kind of way about being a part of the campaign with the Esco and everybody's from some hood, you know, maybe that starting to weigh on him like, damn, I really should not have done that in exchange for fucking free clothes. What did he really get out of that? And now maybe it's subconsciously he's feeling it.
But in pretty standard Atlanta fashion, there's no mention of that.
Right.
That just happened. Like, we've already moved on. We don't know where this fits in chronologically. We don't know any of that. You know, that was in, I believe, London, and now we're back in Amsterdam, where we were, I think, in the first episode or the second episode. So, you know, it's a big goulash. Like, this show does not thrive on clarity.
But wait, what if he was back in Amsterdam because of that canceled show? That he had all the blackface in the audience and was like, fuck it.
Maybe
he had to go back and do that show.
I feel like this, watching this show too, like from a like writing and kind of directorial perspective, I feel like they have a, like how Mae said, it's a goulash. Like, they have a lot of ideas and then they just kind of string them all together. And whether or not it makes total sense does not really matter to the end product. Like, I think they liked the idea of the New Jazz as a name, and in that scene, it worked. It's clever, it's interesting, it makes you think. I think they liked the idea of casting the spotlight on that seat, and it looks dope. It's a cool shot. It doesn't matter if it makes total sense in the grand scheme of things, like the same way the house behind the poorhouse or the lady who's crying as a part of her performance art. Like,
oh my God.
Like, all these things, they're just random, like, kind of creative moments that you would put up on a storyboard, and they kept the ones that they liked that strung together. That's what it feels like watching it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which I enjoy.
I see that.
Like, I don't
yeah, no, it's not bad. I'm not hating. Yeah. I don't have an issue with it either. I don't
it's
think they need it.
It's just so different than normal stuff. I do want to ask you before we get out of Atlanta. Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher turned podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep, free shipping, vacuum-sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high-quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order. Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass-on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, little, hey, boy, how you doing? And Noodles is like, ah, whatever.
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with a plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
B, I'll start with you. At the end, after a lecture from Lorraine, when Paperboy wakes up, when Alfred comes to after his hallucinogenic hibernation, he asks Ern, do I own my masters? And Ern says, yeah. You believe him?
Yeah, I do. I think that maybe his subconscious has been overreacting about the people that's around him. And maybe he's looking at Darius, who is like looking for him to pay for everything. He's putting Ern in the same box as him when actually he's out here doing his thing. I saw someone say on Twitter that season 3 was about Ern becoming more responsible and taking his job a little bit more seriously. And maybe we're continuing to see that growth with him.
You mean 2?
Or 2. Yeah.
Yeah.
Season 2. So maybe he is stepping into a role of someone who is doing what he's supposed to do and has Al's best interest at hand. Because he wasn't privy to the conversation. So it was kind of like, well, because when he asked the first time, he said, huh? And I thought maybe he was like stalling. Like he didn't really want to tell him the truth. And then he was like, oh, yeah. So I believe Earn.
Yeah, I believe him 100%. I think, oddly, that was one of my favorite scenes in the season. And I don't know why certain things stick with me or stand out just in terms of acting performance. I really liked Donald Glover's like kind of calm composure in that scene and just how he, there was a very cousin brother type of moment where there was some sensitivity without it being soft. And it was two men kind of relating to each other on a, like, he's like, oh, you changed my clothes? You know, like there was a bunch of little small moments in there that could have been really like sentimental, but they weren't, you know, and or at least like they were, but they weren't like overly, you know what I'm saying? And so, yeah, he asked, well, not to correct you, Maze, but he asked him, who owns my masters? And then he tells him, he explains to him about the deal that they did with the label. And then he says, you own them. And so, you know, just the whole way he delivered that to me, it didn't feel like he was hesitating. It felt like it was almost matter of fact to him. Like, yeah, like I'm not a dumb nigga and I wouldn't put you in that situation to make you look like a dumb nigga. Like we out here, you know, out here doing this for real. Like, you know, I'm really locked in and like we family and this is some real shit and I'm making sure that I take care of us, you know, and especially you, you know, if anything were to ever happen, you know, in the short term with me rescuing you off the streets of Amsterdam and the long term with me setting up your contracts and making sure that you have all of the works that you've created.
And also, if you look at it, Earn has been giving him whatever he needs, making sure all of his needs are met, you know. And when he was locked up, he asked for this money. Earn didn't know what he needed the money for. He thought he actually needed it for something important. He pulls up, gives Paperboy the money, he just throws it, and the look on his face was like, what the fuck? So yeah, I definitely think he definitely has his best interest at heart. Like, he's taking care of his cousin.
Yeah, and he doesn't do it with like a like any animosity or any like, oh, look at this dumb nigga, or I can't believe you're asking me this question. You know, it's like everything is kind of with love, and I like how they approach those specific moments. Like, they take out all of the other kind of artifice of the show of like, oh, is this real? Is this not real? All of that stuff. And they make these specific moments very real. So, you know, like, no, like focus on this, you know?
Yeah.
Wow.
So do you think it's real?
No. You guys both made very compelling arguments. You're really team Earn right now. I am stunned by this. I don't buy it for a second.
Wow.
Damn.
I think that what you said, B, about Earn being more on top of shit, I feel like they didn't, can't believe I'm about to say this, earn it. We turn to season three and he's just locked in. He's perfect. He's anticipating every possible need. He's getting everything done. He's taking care of everyone. He's so amazing. He's such an amazing manager. So much so that as a character, he hasn't had any interesting scenes.
Right.
And has had no conflict.
Yeah.
All of the conflict is playing out with other characters and with other episodes that have nothing to do with the characters that we know and love. Lorraine jumping out of the subconscious to put that seed in Paperboy's mind there and just thinking about the music industry in general and how hard it is to usually get the rights to your masters. I don't know, man. I don't think he's got them. I think that was a lie.
Do you think there's a possibility? So there's been a focus on this season of him waking up and obviously like the ideas of consciousness. Do you think that they played that common movie game where at the end of the season, he wakes up and it was all a dream, this whole Europe trip, and he's still like, ain't shit, you know, and in the middle of
I really hope not, dude.
In a crummy apartment in Atlanta somewhere.
He just took a nap on the couch in the middle of the field from season one.
Yeah.
Alfred, you're late.
Yeah, exactly.
Yo, is that how this series wraps up? I'm gonna be like, you know what? I'm not gonna lie. I've enjoyed the ride. So even if this is how it ends, I'm cool with it.
Speaking of enjoying the ride,
yeah,
winning time. We did it. It's the finals. Not only that, it is already game 5 of the finals when we start. Yeah. Kareem is posting up signature sky hook and then stomps that ankle.
Woo.
And we have ourselves some stakes for this finale. Man, where do we even begin? This is the natural endpoint for season one. This is what we always knew was coming, right? This moment, this series of moments. How do you feel now that we got there?
You know what? First of all, I could not stop thinking of you two throughout this episode because there was so much basketball. And I just wanted to know, how did you guys enjoy that? Sorry to answer your question with a question, but that's
podcasting,
like, on my mind,
baby.
Heavy.
That's podcasting. That's how you keep these conversations going. You take it, you throw it right back at me. They had more basketball than they've had in the rest of the series. There was some good stuff, and there was also some bad stuff. And I'm trying not to read too much into it. You know what I'm saying? I think my favorite scene that kind of exemplified why you can't really make basketball in movies and television is the scene where Magic takes the inbounds pass or the rebound, and he's taking it up court. And he literally, like, breaks off 3 or 4 members of the opposing team in a row and then throws a pass. And it's like, that's not how people play basketball. They don't line up one at a time to get crossed up. Like, if one guy gets crossed up, then you start rotating. But, like, literally they were all set up like a cone drill for Magic to work his way through. And I was like,
That's how he was doing it back in the day, man.
It was the All-Star Skills Challenge going on out there.
Sorry, is Jason's dad on the call all of a sudden telling me how it was back in the day? Like, what was that?
No, I enjoyed it. I thought some of the overhead shots were really cool. The shot, the moment that the episode starts with Kareem breaking his ankle, I thought that was a cool scene of them playing basketball. I liked the end shot of the ending of the series where Magic dunks over Dr. J, and Dr. J is like cowering while Magic's jumping towards the rim. I thought that was cool. But yeah, I mean, there was a bunch of kind of, you know, unnecessary shots, but they have to try to build the drama of the game and all that stuff. You know, Lakers blowing the lead. I liked when Coop got knocked out. And they needed the smelling salts for him. So they kind of figured creative ways to go around showing too much basketball by showing the action around the game. Yeah.
All of us watching the game at home. Yes.
Yeah. Shout out to Donnell Rawlings for playing the greatest hater on the couch ever. He was perfect. Saying Magic couldn't play center. But yeah, this was all the lead up to the legendary game where Magic Johnson plays center. Goes from being a 6'9 point guard, oversized point guard, to an undersized center.
Jump ball.
Yeah.
Right. So you guys are divided on the basketball action. Okay. All right.
I mean,
you guys would be pleased.
I just found myself questioning, like, man, is it really impossible to do? Like, they were trying. Like, I want to give them credit. I'm not saying that, like, they fucked it up by any means. It's just they tried to do so many different types of plays, shots, whatever, and it really ended up being more confusing than anything, because I guess the biggest thing for me is, like, I would have loved just a constant scoreboard.
That's what I was going to say. Time and score. Like, they never let you know what the score is. And then Chick will yell out some random, oh, they've cut the lead to blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, how do I know that? Because you guys have to edit this like a show. Right. And you can't just leave the score up like we're NBA.
It would be
NBA
a shit ton of work for them to do that, to actually keep the score updated. But that's something that I think would really ground it.
Yeah.
That it kind of lacks, you know?
Yeah. Because at the end, like, you know, Magic dunks on them and they're like, oh, they know the game's over and blah, blah, blah. And then they show the final score and it's like 107 to 123. And I'm like, well, it seems like they had a big lead
that
for a while.
Fast.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, where was the tension? So
how did we get here?
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I agree with Mays 100%. They should have definitely figured out a way to keep that affixed to the screen, that Chiron up there.
So how did you guys feel about Dr. Jerry Buss's, how he was this whole episode? Did we get enough or do you think it was just right?
I got enough. Okay, so I want to say this starting off. Start with the bad news first. I felt like that whole Swan thing was not a good payoff. It was actually a terrible payoff and a horrible way to end this show. It was like, why did you guys
piling, baby?
Yeah, like, why did you guys pick this metaphor to land on? Didn't connect in any significant way whatsoever. So yeah. That being said, I really did like, you know, John C. Reilly's performance in his last episode. I mean, he's been great through the whole show. I hope he wins an award. You know, him with his sons, you know, him not being able to see Jeannie. I mean, him that scene with him and Red telling him to enjoy his plaque. You guys want everything that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That little tete-a-tete was fun. And his nervous moments, you know, I really liked that. And then, you know, going back to Atlanta, his subconscious and thinking about his mom and what she would be telling him. And, you know, I think my favorite line of the show and kind of summed it up better than the whole Swan thing was when she says to him, don't be a sore loser or sore winner, Gerald. Don't be a sore winner. And I think that was like kind of what a lot of the episode and a lot of the show was about, is as a athlete or anybody pursuing a goal, is like you want to get to this moment, but it's all in how do you act or react when you've achieved the thing that you wanted to achieve, and what becomes of your life after that, you know? So
that kind of is a callback to Jerry West when he finally won his championship and it's like, okay, I got it, now what?
Yeah,
still unhappy,
right? And they didn't focus on that part. Like, that was the nugget that they should have really honed in on, and they kind of like threw it away like in the middle of the show.
We got a callback to that Jerry moment, though, because he's not willing to accept credit for the win.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bill says, but if you lost, it'd be on you, right? And Jerry's like, well, yeah, probably. he's just not comfortable with winning. I think that this was a kind of a strange episode to watch, because we're at the end of the season one arcs, and I don't think it's ever really felt as obvious in other shows as it did in this particular show. I think some things worked really well, and they, like, for example, I think Magic and Kareem, the scene in the car before he gets on the plane, I thought that was great. That tied it up, and they did the thing. He said, do you remember when you hugged me in game one? I'm like, yeah, that was four episodes ago. I remember that. But that worked for me, right? I bought the bond between those two. I bought the chemistry between those two guys. One instance where it didn't work is Jack McKinney showing up at Paul Westhead's house like, here's my playbook. It's all good.
Yeah.
What? Like, what? Last time we saw you, it was like, fire him or fire me. Like, we're ready to get this guy out of here. Also, Jack, you know, we conveniently didn't talk about his mental and physical condition at all.
He seemed fine.
Like, yeah, yeah, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go coach another team. I'm gonna go to another job. Competition. Yeah.
Chuckle. And
watching that, I was looking for like any scars on his face. Nothing. So I'm like, okay. I guess we're way past that.
I don't know. Definitely just let's put a bow on this plot line and vamoose, you know. So, and then I think the Jerry Buss one was kind of the weakest, because like you mentioned with the Swan thing. First of all, I don't need a cold open followed by a second cold open where he's talking to us again about some analogy. But then it's like, so what's up with the banks? Oh, we paid him back. It's all good.
It's like,
cool.
Okay. That's all we get with that?
In episode two or three, it was going to be the end of the fucking world and all this shit. It's like, we know they go to the championship. So that got totally deflated. But B, I want to know what hit for you in this episode.
Spencer Haywood.
Mm-hmm. How did I know?
Yeah.
Back to the bathtub with Bethany.
That's right. So when Kareem comes over to holler at him and chat with him, I really enjoyed that scene. What really stood out to me was how he like reminded him, like, you're a beautiful black man, you know, and you have purpose. You have someone to live for. You have people who care about you. And I don't feel like black men are told that enough.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you have purpose here. Don't throw your life away. So that was a really,
certainly not by other men.
Right.
That part.
Yeah, but I loved that scene as well. I thought that was the most powerful scene in the show, one of the most powerful scenes in the whole season. The lines that Spencer Haywood had when he said, "You figured out my trick." He said, "Nigga, you know I ain't shit," you know? And that was such, he was trying to be so honest with himself and with his friend, and at the same time, he was tearing himself down, and it was just, he needed to release that, but also he needed the energy that Kareem gave him directly after to build him back up and let him know, like Bethany said, like, you're a beautiful black man. And I felt like that was just a great moment for the show to be able to have and make it feel authentic.
Yeah. I have a question, Jason. Mm-hmm. Do you and your friends or family, black men, talk to each other that way? Like, do you even say stuff like, oh, I love you, or
nigga, I ain't shit? Not really. I mean, one of my best friends, my college roommate, he's one of those drunk I love you guys. So
That's when you get it.
Yeah. From time to time, like, we might have one of those moments. But in general, no. You know, definitely not from my dad or, like, you know, grandfather, any of those, you know, people. Maybe like my uncles definitely, they're a little bit more in tune with their emotions. I guess like the relationship dynamic is a little different, but yeah, not like my cousins or any of them. It's just like, you know, the occasional like, oh, that's dope, or good job, or, you know, I see you, like, you know, but nothing as deep or intentional as what happened in this episode.
Okay.
What was your guy's favorite moment other than that?
Maze, what were you feeling? What did you like? What did you really like about this?
What did I like?
Did you have a Landsberger moment, Maze?
Landsberger didn't have a good line this episode. He did. There was the Landsberger moment where they say that if Coop doesn't get up and shoot the free throws, they can go to anybody, including like Iron Hands Landsberger.
Hands of Stone.
Hands of Stone Landsberger.
Yeah.
Handsberger. So yeah, that was my Landsberger moment. Glad he didn't have to shoot those free throws and blow the game. I think that it's kind of soul crushing. It's a thing I liked in a sad way, was the genie bus chair pull there, where Jerry's got it appoint a treasurer, and
some
genie walks in.
Open.
It was that classic movie moment, right? Like, oh, we need someone to come and save us, and then the hero walks through the door, right? It's like, oh, genie's here. Yes, genie. Oh, yes, I need you. Oh, thank you. can you call your brothers?
Yeah. Do you know any better people for this job? Please think of somebody.
It's a family business. We need family in here.
We need family. Who's family in here that knows this business, that can take it over, that knows the inner workings of this, that's family?
And the best part of that is that he didn't give a fuck which one.
Yeah.
Can you get one of your brothers to figure this shit out? You know everything. Just tell them how to do it. So, poor Jeannie, don't object to the way she, you know, reacted to it at all, which is like, I'm just going to avoid this, and I'm just going to, you know, I'm not going to go to Philly. And then we get the introduction of the bus bros. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Shout out to them. I'm sure we'll see more of them next season. Thomas Mann, who plays Johnny Bus, is a legit actor who's done stuff before, so that's why I expect to see them back. The guy who plays Jimmy Bus, McCabe Sly, I'm not too familiar with his catalog. Apparently he's on some Netflix show called Fear Street, so that's cool. But I expect to see more Bus family drama going forward. I like that seeding, and I'm pulling for my girl Jeannie.
But you know what kind of threw me off was when it's halftime, the score is tied, and Jeannie just decides to go to the forum and look around and stare off into wherever the fuck.
B, what? If you or I owned the forum, you don't think we'd be taking wistful, pensive walks out to center court every once in a while, just considering the state of our lives and everything that's happening in our family? It's a show, B. Relax.
And then Claire comes out like, hey, come watch the game. Oh, we got it on satellite. I made some chili.
So weird, like, running into you here. I had
that
the forum booked
me
for my pensive session.
Yeah, exactly. It has some overlap in their booking. I like that line that Claire gave to Jeannie, though. She said, you're going to be him.
Yeah, that's a classic, you know, knowing wink at us.
Yeah.
From 2022.
It
was Jeannie Bus all along, right, B?
That's right.
Very 2022.
Like in WandaVision.
Like John Morant, I'm fucking him. So she's him. It's a gender neutral term, being him.
I'm him.
I loved, we got our last moment of Paul Westhead Shakespeare in the locker room at halftime.
And I was every player sitting there listening to it like, Nico, what?
Yeah. He said, if we are marked to die, and they're all like looking at him.
Oh, God.
It's like the fewer men, the greater share of honor. And then Pat's like, let's kill those fuckers.
Translation.
Yeah.
That's like, it's like Luther, right? Obama's
Obama
translator.
Angry translator.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love Pat's moments in this episode too, you know, because basically we're just seeing the dynamic of ruthless Pat Riley when Kareem breaks his ankle. Pat's like, can't you just shoot him up?
So much for that speech to Spencer, showing him the knee surgery scars earlier in the season. When it comes to winning time, shoot him up.
It's the finals, baby.
Another moment that I liked is when the ball boy comes in to give Magic the numbers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was Lon.
That was Lon
Chaney.
I mean, he's been a ball boy this season. That's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, he was going to be what, the duck or whatever it was? What was the mascot?
Oh, yeah. Right. What was that?
Yeah.
But I liked that scene. It was kind of showing that Pat knew to use this in a very particular moment.
Yep.
Whether this happened in real life or not.
Wait, was the Swan thing because they're Lakers?
No.
Oh, I
what
just
strain got, is it? What strain is it, Jason?
I still think that's a stretch, but maybe.
I think it was because that was the duck. He was
it's
wanted to
like,
be a
oh,
duck.
Now that they're Lakers,
it doesn't make it better. It doesn't make it better.
It's not like it fixes it. Yeah.
No. I don't want to make it seem like that. It didn't make it better at all. I just connected it finally.
That was Jason's real fucking light bulb moment of this podcast.
Yeah, seriously.
I wish they could see his face like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. What'd you guys think of that weird audio moment that they did when Pat Riley tells him it was 63-3? Did you guys catch that?
They took out the crowd? Yeah.
They took out the crowd, but then it didn't sound like Adrian Brody's voice either. It was like some weird voice modulation that they did on that moment. You might have to go back and watch it
or something like that.
No, it was very like, I don't, it was strange, but it was
magic. You must avenge my death.
Remember who you are.
What about the golden time of day? Frankie Beverly and Maze. We got that on the plane. That was a nice little vibe moment. Showing Magic is kind of like a basketball genius, if you will. You know, the coach was a little hesitant to go for Magic's idea. Then he opens McKinney's playbook and he sees Magic at center if Kareem is out, circled in red.
Yeah. And it kind of brings it full circle too, because in training camp, no one wanted him to play point guard. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, what? Center? Why would you do that?
Right.
Yep.
Keep that same energy.
What's right, up? Right. Yeah, they wanted Jerry West wanted him banging bodies in the post, and that's how they end up winning the title.
Boom.
I got to give a shout out to I'm glad they squoze the chicks line in. It's in the refrigerator. The lights are out. The butter's getting hard. The Jell-O's jiggling. This classic Chick Hearn. Make sure they got that in there before the season was done. It's great.
Yeah.
We got one last fist.
Yeah. who was that next to him that got fisted?
Yeah, that guy's been there for a while. He's got he's definitely got a recognizable face, but I don't know if he's supposed to be somebody that we would know.
Oh, Maze, I did want to say we finally did get a black dick on screen. Somebody had a sign at the game that said Magic Squallows, and it was a black dick.
See that. Oh, my God.
It was a black.
They didn't fill that shading in.
No, yeah. They didn't. They didn't shade it in, but they had a little pricklies by the balls. So, yeah, they fulfilled our requests.
Wait, so you think white penises don't have pricklies?
No, I'm not saying that. It was a black.
Why do you think it's black? Because he used a black Sharpie.
Putting him on the spot. How do you know that this dick was black?
It's a great, all great points.
Oh my, it was a little pale to me.
Right.
I also did like Angry Larry Bird.
Yeah.
At home.
Yes.
And then getting out in the driveway and putting up some shots. I like that. That was a good little touch. And then I wanted to mention, B, you sent that video of the Lakers shooting around.
I did. I sent it.
Oh, sorry. Jason sent that video of the Lakers shooting around. And holy crap, Jamal Wilkes' jump shot is hideous. That's some of the worst shooting form.
You
I've
saw that when he's like,
seen, dude.
It was like Sean Marion, like.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah, it's like Sean Marion had sex with a catapult. That's what that was.
Yeah, that was bad. Can't believe he made it to the league with that. Did Magic tell his mama to fuck you when he was cussing out everybody on the couch in his mind?
He said, "Fuck you, fuck you, fuck everybody,
and fuck like, all y'all."
Okay. Yeah. Fuck all y'all.
Damn, Magic. Mama's just trying to watch out for you.
Well, but yeah, we made it. We made it through the season. We get to look forward to season 2, which has already been confirmed that it will be coming up. So I guess I'll leave our wrap up of the year with this question. For season 2, do you want to see another one season or do you want to see a couple seasons? Jason, I'll start with you.
Well, I think I want to see a couple seasons. I think there may have been some truth to that rumor of them doing the Kobe and Shaq. And I think that
may
have gotten the kibosh. And I think the only way to kind of pick up this show is to hopefully... another thing, we never got any closure to that first establishing shot of Magic in the... in the clinic.
Which is why I was going to say
They never wrapped that up.
We're going to need a couple more seasons. We're going to need a couple more seasons.
If you were like just an unbiased, unaware viewer, somebody who was born in like 1999, not from America, didn't know anything about this, and were watching this, you'd be like, what the fuck was that first scene about?
That has got to be one of the dumbest possible ways to start this show. Just don't do it. Just don't do it.
They didn't have Michael Jordan in the show. They didn't, you know, none of the, nothing in that scene ever connected to anything else that happened. So yeah, just had to get that off. So yeah, I hope they do. I hope they just wrap up the 80s, you know, and maybe get to the finals where he played Jordan and maybe end it there. You know, where this ended on a high note, maybe the next season can show kind of all the glory of the 80s of them going back and forth with the Celtics, and then kind of end it in like 1990 when Michael Jordan beats them in the Forum.
B, your thoughts?
I would like for them to give us more seasons, because clearly they're not giving us a lot of basketball. So I'd predict a bunch of slam cuts to like, it's All-Star break. Now it's the playoffs. Like, we're just going to skip through and focus on a lot of the off-court situations that happen, because we still clearly have to see what's going on with Spencer and this hit that he has out, or if it's still on, like what's going on with this whole situation. And because we didn't get to tie that up. He orders a hit on the Lakers. He's still clearly disgruntled, but what now? So yeah, I want to see more seasons. Yeah.
All right. Here's my official prediction. Season two. So we just wrapped up 1980. Season two will start in 1981 and end in 1985. And the way that breaks down is Celtics win a title, Lakers win a title, but they don't play each other. Sixers-Celtics rematch, Sixers win. Then we get Lakers-Celtics 1, Celtics win. Then we get Lakers-Celtics 2, Lakers win. I'm doing all that. So you got Pat Riley taking over. You got Lakers-Celtics back-to-back finals. And I think that by the end of that season, the main, like, Larry Bird is a way bigger character. And I think that we have the Magic Bird dynamic and the way it took over the league as like the main story, and then like Pat Riley's ascendance as the other main thing. And I think that'd be dope. And I think that they could,
and Kareem finally retiring too.
Right. Mm-hmm. And kind of winding down Kareem. So that's what I want to see. I think that there were some really cool storylines in this first season that I understand why they stuck with it, like Jack McKinney, like dedicating a whole episode to that Tark the Shark story, which was pretty wild, and just kind of getting everything in place. But if they do another season of the show like they did this year, that would be disappointing to me. So I hope that's not the case.
Yeah, I agree.
And put off the Kobe Shaq stuff for a while.
Please.
Don't rush to that.
Yeah, I think they should give that its due time, and the same way they did this, you know? Like, I think that needs another decade at least.
Yeah, we don't. Until let some time go by. Please. Yeah.
Wow,
please.
Now who's sounding like parents?
Exactly. Yeah,
folks. And that's why you tune in every week to Winning Time, to Showtime, the podcast about the show Winning Time that just ended, based on the book Showtime that aired every Sunday on HBO, not Showtime. For Bethany Anderson, Jason Madison, I'm Anthony Mason. We'll see you next week to talk about the second to last episode of Atlanta.
Atlanta.
Atlanta. And then we'll see.